Talk about this Dutch bird and the smooth Dutch birds generated by projective representations of finitely generated abelian groups. Probably everyone knows these notions, but anyway, let me start with the projective representations. So take a group and take a Hilbert space. A projective representation just means a map from the group to the unitary group of the Hilbert space, such that if we modulo the circle, the composite numbers with the modulus 1, we get the group homomorphism. In other words, we can write that the unitary UG corresponding to G times UH will be basically U of GH up to a complex scalar, which actually is on the circle. From here, you can get a bunch of conditions for the sigma to be satisfied. That is essentially what's called the two cocycle for this group G. Now, given this two cocycle G sigma, let's fix it and look at this, all such representations, and look at the Swiss algebra corresponding to it. Then we get the universal Swiss algebra generated by unitaries satisfying this relationship. Okay. And this is also called the twisted group algebra corresponding to this two cocycle. And we can also look at the reduced algebra, which just means you take the regular representation on the L2 space and look at the Swiss algebra this unitary generates. In the case that this group is finitely generated and has polynomial growth, we can also consider the smooth group algebra, which is a subalgebra of the reduced to twisted group algebra here. Let's write it. On the other hand, you can think of it as the subspace in the L2 space, written as a with coefficient UG, AG, A sub G. So A sub G is a constant scalar, and U sub G, you can think of it as the orthonormal basis of the L2 space, such that this coefficient satisfying this growth condition, when you multiply it actually essentially by the length function to the L to the kth power, is still in the L2 space. Here, L is the word length function on the group G. That means you pick up finitely many generators, given one arbitrary element in G, you write it as a product of these generators and their inverses, and take the minimal number which you need to get the product. In general, we know that this smooth algebra, the dense pressure is the subalgebra of the reduced group algebra and closed under the holomorphic function calculus, the infinity function calculus for self-adjoint elements. So it's a nice object for the study of non-commutative differential geometry. This algebra does not depend on the choice of the generators. Yeah. Okay. In general, we can even talk about arbitrary length function and define a similar thing, as long as you know what is the condition for length function should be satisfied. And given two length functions, if they are bounded each other by a polynomial, then you get the same smooth algebra here. Now let's specialize to the case where the group is finitely generated abelian group. Then these algebras, in fact, in general, we know that they depend only on the cohomology class of the two cocycle. In this case, they depend only on just the skew symmetric back character, which is defined as just take sigma and also take the sigma for H and G reverse and take the inverse, take the product. Okay. If we take this relationship, you write correspond, because now the group is abelian, and you write correspondingly what happens for UH, UG here, you get the coefficient here, then you find out that you get this relationship, then this fixed algebra is actually just the universal algebra generated by your torus satisfying this relationship here. Certainly these algebras have been studied for a long time before, in the case especially the group is torsion free. When the group is torsion free, then actually the algebras are exactly the non-commutative torus. And if you count more precisely, okay, when the group has rank 1, then that corresponds to the just ordinary one-dimensional torus. Usually rank of torus start with dimension 2 there. We'll just denote the fixed algebra in this rotation and the smooth algebra is infinity here in this rotation. Especially, but though for the torsion free case, these are just non-commutative torus, but the general case also appeared in previous work, especially the torsion here, it means the torsion part of this group. That just means the elements in the group which has a finite order. This torsion part is cyclic. In this case, it appears in Philips' work on the simple non-commutative tori. It shows that they are all H algebras, and maybe we will hear more about that in his talk. And also, as related to non-commutative torus, every such an algebra is actually a quotient of some non-commutative torus. And if you take an arbitrary non-commutative torus, you take the simple quotients. They have different quotients, but the simple quotients are all isomorphic, and they are all like of this form for some finitely generated abelian group. Now, but this simple quotient, this group is no longer torsion free. Okay. So if you want to study more about the structure of non-commutative torus, especially for non-simple ones, these algebras arise naturally. Okay. And also for non-rational non-commutative torus, that means we know usually for non-commutative torus, we just write down a skew symmetric and by matrices, zero numbers, and you see the non-commutative torus is generated by something like this, where these numbers come from the entries of the matrices. In the case that the entry of the matrices are not all rational, that means just we have at least one irrational number there. We've showed that non-commutative torus has a lot of less properties, especially that, for instance, for the order Kessler group, or the projections has a cancellation property, and the order structure is determined by the traces. In the proof, essentially, very importantly, he showed that, especially for the cancellation property, he used that for any projective for finitely generated module of such a non-commutative torus. It is always a direct sum of modules whose endomorphism algebra is of this form. Okay. And this is essential in his proof for the cancellation property. Basically, he showed that the stable rank of such algebra is at most is always bounded by the rank of this group G there. As for the non-commutative torus case, the dual group G hat of this group, well, the group is a finitely generated abelian group, so the dual group will be a compact group, and actually it's a Lie group, and they connected the component parts connected to the identity is just the torus, n-dimensional torus. Now it acts on this algebra because of the universal property in this way. And here this lambda is in a dual group and G is in the group G there. So this is a pairing between this group and the dual group. And it turns out that this smooth algebra is exactly just the smooth vectors for this action. And from this action, then we can also take, as usual, whenever you have a group acts act smoothly on a manifold, when you take the algebra of this group, you get correspondingly vector fields on this manifold. Here, in a similar way, we get that the Lie group acts on this smooth algebra as derivations. More explicitly, if you take the decompression of this group, write it as the torsion part times a torsion-free part, this decompression is not canonical. The torsion part is well-defined, but this part is not well-defined. But you can always pick up for such a decompression. Then, for any elements here in the group, in this algebra here, you can take the Fourier coefficients. So in general, you can always write them as A sub G times U sub G if we take G into the group. Now we have use the decompression to write the group elements as G and H. Then this element is in the smooth part, if and only if that's more explicitly, for every G in the torsion part, we know that this part is finite. This function sends G to this coefficient using the Schwarz space. That means that it decays very rapidly. We mark any polynomial in n variables, it vanishes at infinity. Okay. Then this, for these derivations, explicitly you can write that this derivation delta x corresponding to x in the algebra is just 2 pi I times the x compared with the pairing with the H, but you remember that X is in a number in the element in R to N, and the H is one element in Z to N, so you just take the usual pairing for Euclidean space. So under the Fourier derivations, you don't see what happens to the torsion part. The torsion part disappears. Now, what can we say about these algebras? They generalize the non-curvatura. In general, we can see that the fifth algebra is a section algebra of a continuous field of the fifth algebras over the spectrum of the center of this algebra. In fact, the spectrum of the center of this algebra is just, we know that's a commutative fifth algebra. And the spectrum actually is the union of several ordinary torus. And so this algebra is the continuous field of this algebra over this union of several torus. And with fiber algebras, this fiber algebra is still of this original form for some finite generic abelian group and some symmetric back character there. More, it is even true that this continuous field of fifth algebra is locally trivial. That means locally actually you put this algebra at every point in a trivial way. Okay. But globally this is for most of the time this is never trivial. Okay. Globally it's never a trivial field. Almost never trivial field. Okay. And what is this G prime and O prime here? In fact, when we say it explicitly, so this, let's say, this Z, the G Zo, which means that the center for this by character, that means all the elements in G, when you take the pairing with other elements under this by character, you can always get one. Then this G prime here is just the quotient of G by this center. And in fact, this rho prime actually just is corresponding quotient of rho on this G prime. In the case that for just the two-dimensional non-combinatorics, the irrational rotation algebra, just for the rotation algebra, if the theta, if the parameter theta is non-zero, then it's not trivial. So this basically essentially what we can say immediately. If you want to analyze more about it, then this reminds us of the continuous trace system algebras, the algebras over some Hausdorff space where the fiber algebras compact objects in the case. But that is already complicated enough. If you want to analyze more, you need to take the invariants there. And now up to this prior thing here is that up to metric equivalence, this algebra can be trivialized. This continuous field of cyst algebras can be made into a trivial continuous field of cyst algebras. And actually we can see quite a strong thing here. For any such group and squishy metric back character here, let's take n to be rank. That just means, if you remember here, n is exactly the degree here. So you can describe it as a tensor with Q, then you take the dimension, or you just modulo the torsion part, count the how many copies of Z you need there. Then there will exist another pair of abelian group and the skew symmetric back character. But this part, this time, this group will be torsion free, such that the smooth algebra will be more equivalent to finitely many copies of the corresponding smooth algebra for this pair. And not only more equivalent, actually it's completely more equivalent. This is stronger than just saying that these two algebras are more equivalent. We will say a little bit about the precise definition in a few minutes. No, it's complete Morita equivalence. Okay. Not completely. Fortunately, this is not B there. Okay. And in fact, we can make, it turns out that this N has to be the same as the rank of this group also. So they have the same rank. And what is the number of copies we need here? In fact, this number of copies is actually just the torsion part intersect with the center part for this back character, and you take the numbers. We know that this part is finite. So finite main number, this number is finite. And what is special about this back character here? Why did we write it as z to the m cross z to the k? Why didn't we just write z to the n there? In fact, we can see that something special here is that if you take two elements in this group, so G1, H1 corresponds to this decomposition, G2, H2 corresponds to this decomposition. When we take this back character, G1 and H1 disappears. So it has not, so this, the back character does not do anything on this part, the first component. It only does something for the second component. If you write it into a matrix way, if you're familiar with the non-combinatorics, you know the skew symmetric matrix is corresponding to non-combinatorics. That just means that this matrix will have this form, so 0, 0, and only the left right corner corresponding to this part might be non-zero. The final group for this one is actually the degenerate subgroup. Yeah. Just the center part corresponding to this one. And we want even a little bit more here that this when we take this excuse me, Mr. Bacalker, we know that actually it acts only on this second part. In fact, we can see that it's non-degenerate. That means that the center part here is just zero. And it is well known that this condition just corresponds to that if we take the non-combinatorials associated to this bicharacter and this group, this non-combinatorial is simple. In general, I don't think that can be done. In general, if you take this subgroup, you cannot write it as cross with another group such that this bicharacter just acts trivially on the first part. You cannot do that. Yes, so that is after we take this metacovariance, we can make it so special. Originally, we can't do that. No, we cannot do that.
No.
In general, that's impossible. You cannot find the.
You're not going to be able to find complementary
subgroups. Yeah. For a special case. In the case that this S is actually equal to 1, we can see a little bit more explicitly what could be this group. If we don't want just such a strong statement, if we just want that the sixth algebra is more equivalent to the sixth algebra here, in the case that S equals 1, then we can take this to be a subgroup of G. Okay. But I don't know whether we can do that for the smooth algebra level. So in particular, for non-combinatorials, in the case of non-combinatorials, we know that that just means basically the group G itself is torsion-free. Then this G torsion part has to be trivial, then S has to be automatically 1. Then we see that for this case, we get just that this guy is more equivalent to something like this. Okay. So, but the right-hand side here, if you look at this one, this just means that this guy is the tensor product of the part corresponding to Z to M and the part corresponding to Z to the K. For each part, we do take the corresponding restriction of the bicharacter. But on Z to the M, this bicharacter is trivial, so we get just that the ordinary torus. And on Z to the K, as I just mentioned, this non-degeneracy means that it's a simple non-combinatorials. Now, let's see what is does it mean for the two algebras to be complete meta-equivalence. So complete meta-equivalence was introduced by Schwartz for non-combinatorials for application in physics. He showed that if two non-combinatorials are meta-equivalent, then in relation to matrix algebra, matrix M theory, then these two algebras will give physically equivalent compact equation of the M theory. Okay. Anyway, that's just some motivation in for his in physics. But we can generalize his definition to this case very in a natural way. So this just means that, first of all, have a equivalent spy module for these two algebras. This is a multi-equivalent spy module. This just means that it's a predictable module for each algebra. Of course, for this one, that is the right module, and for this one, is the left module. Such that this endomorphic algebra of this module here, and this is the endomorphic algebra of this module here, and algebraically you want to repeat more that this is a generator in the sense that the algebra itself as a triple module is a direct sum of some corpus of the direct sum of some corpus of this guy, and here we require it to be a Hermitian by module in the sense that there is some inner product. There's one inner product invalid here, one inner product invalid here, satisfying some compatibility condition introduced by Riffle. Okay. We're not going to see that precisely. And this, for these inner products, in the Hilbert space, very much like, so you get the L2 norm, Hilbert space norm there, and it turns out that for these two inner products, you get the same norm there. So after you take the completion, you get the equivalent spy module for the sixth algebra. More essentially, more important thing is that there will be a linear isomorphism from the algebra of one group to the other one, and a connection, which means just for each x here in the algebra of H, we have a linear map from the module to itself, such that it satisfies this Leibniz property. So, just think of that. Just means you think of this connection as the derivation on the module, and you get just the derivation property corresponding. And especially this, one can carry out these definitions in a more general way. And essentially what it means is that this spy module transfers the algebra here to this algebra. Okay. And this algebra should be thought of as the tangent space of the corresponding smooth algebras. If you think of them as the smooth manifolds. And also we require that this derivation has constant curvature, just meaning that the commutant here is a complex scalar. In general, we can see that if this is satisfied, then this commutant is always in the center of these algebras. They have the same center, isomorphic centers. So here we require a bit more same constant, just meaning that this commutant is in fact a constant there. So that is the definition of this complement equivalence. Especially we see that these algebras are multi-equivalent, both at the smooth algebra level and the sixth algebra level. This multi-equivalence thing tells us, as it is well known, multi-equivalent algebras share a lot of properties. So especially they share, immediately we get a lot of properties about this this kind of algebras just form the corresponding properties of non-convolutional tori, especially we get the K-group, just form the corresponding K-groups of the non-convolutional tori. And when this skew-symmetric bicolor is non-trivial, is non-rational, just means that it has infinite order, so you take the sum of two bicolors, you get still another bicolor, skew-symmetric. Under this condition, it has a cancellation property for projections. That means if two projections are the same in the Kader group, then they are already equivalent. And the order on the projection is determined by the traces. Just means that if you two projections, one is always larger than the other one for any trivial state, then this projection is denominates the other one. Okay. And this just follows from Ripple's result for non-combinatorial, correspondingly. And also we can, since Nest computed the cyclic cohomology, periodic cyclic cohomology of non-combinatorial, then we can get correspondingly the periodic cohomology for these algebras, and we just use that the fact that algebraic metal equivalence is always topological. So this you can see that for under this metal equivalence, the algebras will have this in periodic cyclic cohomology. And also, Phillips showed that every simple non-combinatorial is an IT algebra. Okay, we'll focus more about that. Then correspondingly, we'll get that for this class of algebra, if it's simple, it's also a non-combinatorial because it's preserved on the metal equivalence. Okay. And we can even describe completely what when two such algebras are, cis algebras are metal equivalent. This happens if only if they have the same order of Kessler group and the centers. Okay. Also, still, this uses Phillips result for the simple non-combinatorial case. Okay. So follows from his results on the H for these algebras to be H algebras. Okay. All right. I'll stop here. Oh. It's actually, I thought it's 15. So the proof here, so see the main result, main part is this theorem here. This theorem here. So what's the proof for, as I mentioned, this especially tells us that for the non-combinatorials, every non-combinatorial is complementary equivalent to one as a tensor product of an ordinary one and the simple non-combinatorial. So the proof actually goes to prove this part first. Then we use the fact that every such algebra is a quotient of some non-combinatorial. So the way you do is just to take a surjective homomorphism from a torsion-free one because it's finitely generated, so you can always do this. And you pull back this schizometric backcalculator to it, then you get the schizometric backcalculator here. From the reverse property, you get the homomorphism from the corresponding algebra here to the algebra here. Okay, then it turns out that the sixth algebra level is obvious that this is a quotient. Then we use that this one is metal equivalent to someone as a tensor product, and we do need that this is actually complete metal equivalence. Then we can say that from this conditions, the definition of complete metal equivalence, it turns out that these conditions is much more important than it might look like. Especially it tells us that these conditions implies that the center there is one center for correspondingly goes isomorphism from the center of for this backcalculator here to the center of the other one. Okay. And we know that, in fact, the center of the algebra is actually algebra generated by these guys. So more importantly, this information tells us that this isomorphism from the center here going to the other one. Okay. And if we look at how we constructed this lift, then we get that, in fact, this quotient corresponds to just take a subgroup of this center, subgroup of this center here, and take the evaluation at a certain point. Then corresponding, you take the subgroup on the other side, you take the evaluation at a certain point, then you get this meta-equivalence here, complete meta-equivalence here. Okay. So we do need a lot of information, the precise definition of complete meta-equivalence here. And for the proof of this part, it follows from the classification of non-combinatorial up to complete meta equivalence. So this is after the work of Riffle Schwartz beyond the classification of non-combinatorial up to complete meta equivalence. So essentially the result is that two such algebras are complete meta equivalence. If and only if the corresponding super symmetric matrices are in the same orbit for the S O N and Z action. So I'm not going to say precisely what is this group. Anyway, so this is the group acting on the space of super symmetric and biomatrices, which is the parameter space of the n-dimensional non-combinatorial, and it's defined almost everywhere. So for every element, it acts on a dense subset of the space of super symmetric and biomatrices. And the proof here is actually to really use algebra to use a lot of things about how to describe such matrices as a certain subspace of the R to the 2N under certain brackets. Okay, so use that, one can show that for any squishy symmetric matrices, one can really find a set of prime and R matrix such that there is one element G takes the one to the other one, and this matrix is of a certain special form, which actually is just of this special form, satisfying these conditions. So anyway, so essentially this just comes from this classification in the results, but still, even to find the for given set, if you want to find G and theta prime satisfying those conditions, it's not trivial to do that. Right, and another part for the proof for this one, reduce it to the non-combinatorial case, because everyone is already meta-equivalent to a non-combinatorial, so we just need to show what happens for non-combinatorial. Then use this meta-equivalence, you can reduce even further to the case that these non-combinatorial are of the form as the tensor product of two guys. Then we use the Riffle result on the order structure of the carrier groups of these algebras to show that if two algebras have the same order carrier groups, when you pass to this form, then the simple parts here, they also have isomorphic order carrier groups. Then we take Phillips result to get that they are meta equivalent. Then after we take tensor product, they are still meta equivalent.
Have more equivalence here, so
First of all, if we want to, so this, first of all, at least this provides more evidence that this is true for non-simple non-combinatorial 2P isomorphic to its operator algebra, because if they are isomorphic, then they have to have the same simple quotients, but the simple quotients are exactly of this form for some G and rho, and now we know that the IH algebra is so corresponding the simple quotient for one guy is the operator algebra of the simple quotient for the operator algebra. So because of this, we know that their simple quotients are really isomorphic. Okay. So on one side, we get more evidence for what you're asking. And in general, if you want to get isomorphic results from the monetary equivalence results, there might be we're taking some approach to that, but have not really succeeded to do it. So one approach might be just to take this, start with some information. Certainly, this should imply that this should be true. And if you want to conclude that they are in fact isomorphic, just for non-combinatorial, conclude they are isomorphic. So we just get the isomorphic equivalence first. Then one way to do it is to try to show that for this isomorphic equivalence, certainly you will get isomorphism of the Kaler group. So this is an ordered Kaler group isomorphism. If we can show that it takes that the unit element to the unit element under the condition that none of them is under condition that they are not rational, okay, then because of that the projection has this cancellation property, then we can conclude that if one goes to one, then this multi-equivalence bimodule actually has to be the algebra themselves. So the trivial bimodule. For the trivial one-sided module, it has to be. Okay. So if we can get such, can find such a bimodule, it takes one to one, then we're done. Okay. So the trouble is how to find really such a bimodule there. In the case that these algebras are actually simple, then in fact, given the ordered Kaler group isomorphism, we can find such a equivalence module there. The trouble is that in general, when it's non-simple, then it will need to get some has some property on for H algebras when you take the stable isomorphism. For instance, under what condition under the isomorphism, we know that for ID algebras the invariants are just the Kaler groups, so you can just For this case, the invariants are just the order Kaler groups. So after we take a stabilization, tensor with the K algebras, tensor with the compact operators, and what you do is to take this isomorphism between the Kaler group, then you get an isomorphism between the stabilized algebras. Okay, you can get one such isomorphism inducing this isomorphism for the Kaler groups. Then from that isomorphism, you get an equivalence bimodule there, okay, giving you what you want. For the simple case, we have that. So the trouble here is that in a general case, you need to take the trouble for the case that if the algebra is not a simple H algebra, but an ordinary torus, tensor is a simple H algebra, we need similar results. Okay. So given certain isomorphism between the ordinary Kaler groups, we want to lift it up to an isomorphism between the stabilized algebras, or at least lift it up such not completely, but that you want to induce the isomorphism will take certain element to the certain element, which presumably corresponds to the identity and the identity.
What is one expected for this more general groups, not just finite generated groups? Well, even the simple case is not clear, but in the non-simple case, it's not clear that the center would be enough information to not correlated with human people.
I don't know. So in general, certainly trouble here is always that you start with the information, you want to construct an incremental spy module, and all this boils down, if you look at the proof, boils down to the we need the information here, so such incremental spy module, besides Philips result for the simple case. But for these guys, this proof here, this boils down to Riffle's construction of Heisenberg modules for non-combinatorial. So that's a very explicit construction. If one wants to do similar thing for not finitely generated random groups, one needs to carry out constructing a lot of modules for such algebras. Sure, but actually I didn't really try to write down the concrete one. Yeah, I didn't try to given a concrete G, and so I didn't try to really write down the corresponding on the other side the group and the bicalculus. Yeah, didn't try to do that. Yeah, as I said, the proof is actually to, for this part, this theorem, the proof is actually to reduce it to the torsion-free case, using this first result. Actually, just reduce it, in fact, yeah, reduce it just to, for this case, for the torsion-free case. And more explicitly, actually reduce it to this case. This torsion-free, not only torsion-free, but actually the tensor product of the ordinary one and a simple one. If you just want the simple non-combinatorials, if you just want the fixed algebra level, then for this part, if you just want the fixed algebra level, metal equivalent, and as I mentioned, for S equals 1, this part can be taken to a subgroup of it. The way you do is to, this can be written down very explicitly. The way you do is to take Z as written as Z N1, Z N2, Z N sub K, so this is a cyclic group, and cross Z. So what you do is to take this part, and think of this algebra as this group acting on the corresponding algebra for this part. You take a restriction of this row here, get the corresponding algebra here, and that side, this algebra then is a cross product. Then just what you do is to take the fixed point algebra, which corresponds to, you look at the subgroups here, which when you take the pairing with this guys, you get always one. Okay. So that gives you a subgroup H1 belongs to this part. Okay. Then you get that this algebra is metal equivalent to the algebra corresponding to this subgroup, and you take this restriction of this bicalculator. Then you keep going doing this, then you see that this group is getting smaller and smaller, and especially the torsion part is getting smaller, strictly smaller, so eventually you don't have any torsion part at all, then you get the non-combinatorial there. But still, if you want to get that down, it more explicitly into this form as the tensor product of that, get the matrix into this form, that is quite complicated.